Just as they were setting off, the gentlemen returned. They had taken out a young dog who had spoilt their sport and sent them back early. Their time and strength and spirits were, therefore, exactly ready for this walk, and they entered into it with pleasure. Could Anne have foreseen such a junction, she would have stayed at home. But, from some feelings of interest and curiosity, she fancied now that it was too late to retract, and the whole six set forward together in the direction chosen by the Miss Musgroves, who evidently considered the walk as under their guidance. Anne's object was not to be in the way of anybody, and where the narrow paths across the fields made many separations necessary, to keep with her brother and sister. Her pleasure in the walk must arise from the exercise and the day, from the view of the last smiles of the year upon the tawny leaves and withered hedges, and from repeating to herself some few of the thousand poetical descriptions extant of autumn, that season of peculiar and inexhaustible influence on the mind of taste and tenderness, that season which had drawn from every poet worthy of being read some attempt at description or some lines of feeling. She occupied her mind as much as possible in such like musings and quotations, but it was not possible that when within reach of Captain Wentworth's conversation with either of the Miss Musgroves, she should not try to hear it. Yet she caught little very remarkable. It was mere lively chat, such as any young person's on an intimate footing might fall into. He was more engaged with Louisa than with Henrietta. Louisa certainly put more forward for his notice than her sister. This distinction appeared to increase, and there was one speech of Louisa's which struck her. After one of the many praises of the day, which were continually bursting forth, Captain Wentworth added, "What glorious weather for the Admiral and my sister! They meant to take a long drive this morning. Perhaps we may hail them from some of these hills. They talked of coming into this side of the country. I wonder whereabouts they will upset today. Oh, it does happen very often, I assure you. But my sister makes nothing of it. She would as lief be tossed out as not." "Ah, you make the most of it, I know," cried Louisa. "But if it were really so, I should do just the same in her place. If I loved a man, as she loves the Admiral, I would always be with him. Nothing should ever separate us, and I would rather be overturned by him than driven safely by anybody else." It was spoken with enthusiasm. "Had you?" cried he, catching the same tone. "I honour you." And there was silence between them for a little while. Anne could not immediately fall into quotation again. The sweet scenes of autumn were, for a while, put by, unless some tender sonnet, fraught with the apt analogy of the declining year with declining happiness, and the images of youth and hope and spring, all gone together, blessed her memory. She roused herself to say, as they struck by order into another path, "Is not this one of the ways to Winthrop?" But nobody heard, or at least nobody answered her. Winthrop, however, or its environs, for young men are sometimes to be met with strolling about near home, was their destination, and after another half mile of gradual ascent through large enclosures where the ploughs at work and the fresh-made path spoke the farmer counteracting the sweets of poetical despondence and meaning to have spring again, they gained the summit of the most considerable hill, which parted Uppercross and Winthrop, and soon commanded a full view of the latter, at the foot of the hill on the other side. Winthrop, without beauty and without dignity, was stretched before them, an indifferent house, standing low and hemmed in by the barns and buildings of a farmyard. Mary exclaimed, "Oh, bless me, here is Winthrop. I declare I had no idea. Well, now, I think we had better turn back. I am excessively tired."